It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
It's time for the 94th episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. I'm so glad you're listening. I've got a great episode this time with all kinds of Batman and Superman stuff going on. We start off with a great interview with Kyle Higgins, the scripter for Nightwing, and who's taking on Batman Beyond. He talks a lot about how he got into comics and what we can expect from him in the future. Then I talk with Dave Romeo from Comics on the Green, a very successful comic shop in northeastern Pennsylvania. In fact, I think it's the primo shop in that area. We talk about the industry and how his business is doing, and we talk a little bit about Superman and Batman in there too, so I think you're going to want to listen. Then everything wraps up with my faster than a speeding bullet review of Man of Steel. There is a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. It's always a pleasure to welcome a Batman creator to the podcast, and this week I have the pleasure of bringing Kyle Higgins, a creator on Nightwing and many other good things. How are you doing today, Kyle?
I'm doing well, sir. How about yourself?
Doing well. The first time you and I interacted was a couple years ago. You were doing the Gates of Gotham, and you did a written Q&A for me, which I really appreciated. So it's great to talk to you, you know, voice to voice.
Oh, you too. And that was a couple years ago. It doesn't really feel like it.
Well, it was one of those things that I've always said that I could never understand why people didn't get into the history of Gotham. And now you guys are going into there pretty well, and I'm so happy because there's all this great history to be mined, and you guys are digging and coming up with this wonderful stuff, so I'm really happy about all that.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I mean, that was obviously the big appeal for the project when I signed on to do it. So, you know, I'd love to do more of it at some point.
Well, I'm sure you'll get the chance because Batman seems to be a growing franchise, so I think that'll happen. That'll be fun. Now, why don't we talk a little bit about how you got into comics? One of the questions I asked you in the written Q&A session was about you have a background in film. You actually studied film, and you actually did a superhero film as your thesis back in the college days. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Basically, yeah, I went to Chapman University in Orange County. I transferred there after my second year at the University of Iowa. I'm from Chicago originally. And when I went to Chapman, in order to gain acceptance into, or admission, I guess, into the film school, I had to write like a 3-page story based on a predetermined prompt. And I spun the prompt into a kind of comical look at what a superhero labor union might be like in the midst of a battle. And, you know, heroes that basically are, you know, get off the clock mid-punch and, you know, that sort of thing. And, you know, the school liked it enough to let me transfer into the program. And once I started in the program, I had a big background in sound design. That was actually my focus initially when I was at Chapman because no one really did it at the school aside from, I think there were like, you know, 4 or 5 of us. And I had done a lot of it when I was at Iowa, actually for my friend's film, my friend who I share an office with right now, I was telling you about before the show. Mm-hmm. And so I started working on a different friend's thesis film at Chapman, doing all the sound design for it. It was a large-scale, large-in-scope project. It was kind of a Sam Raimi horror film. And I saw what the project did for my buddy. His name is Bobby Glicker. I saw what it did for him as far as attention went and using it as something of a calling card after school as a director, and I made the decision kind of right then and there that I wanted to do a big thesis film, and I wanted to do something that there wasn't a lot of at the time as far as student films go, and something I was passionate about, subject matter I was passionate about. And the way that I got into film really was through growing up, some of the superhero films, some of the superhero movies, the Donner Superman film, Burton's Batman. So I thought this might be my only chance to do a superhero movie. So why not roll the dice on it now? And I'm going to have to live with this thing for at least a year to make it and finish it. and put everything I have into it. So it needs to be something, again, like I said, that I was really passionate about. And that turned into The League, which you can check out a trailer for it on theleaguefilm.com, or you can buy it through iTunes. The whole thing's about 27 minutes long. And that led to writing it at Marvel Comics. Joe Quesada reached out to me after he saw it, and I pitched for about 10 months and landed a one-shot, Captain America one-shot, with my friend Alex Siegel, who I co-write with sometimes. And that was kind of the beginning of it.
It's interesting. You started right at the top. You start with Marvel and DC. You didn't have to work your way up. So I guess that was a good sign that good things to come.
I don't know if I'd say right at the top. I mean, I think it kind of depends on, as a writer, the types of stories you want to tell. You know, writing superhero stuff is not everyone's cup of tea, and it's not what a lot of writers want to do. I don't want to overgeneralize saying that. I mean, there's definitely a place for it, you know? So for me, like, just with my background growing up with superheroes, and that's really what I wanted to do. I was very fortunate in that my opportunity kind of came right away for it.
Well, it's very cool because I think that was a sign that you could fit the genre very well, because you have a lot of ability to make us care about the people in the stories, but you also have a nice fast-paced way of telling a story. It doesn't slow down. It keeps our interest going, and I like, even when you're doing like character bits, like for example in recent books where Nightwing's talking to his current girlfriend, it keeps my attention. It doesn't feel like it slows down all of a sudden, and I always like that about your writing, is that it's gripping. It pulls me in and it keeps me there until the end of the book, and I like that a lot.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that's something that I'm trying to get better at even still. I mean, I look at it as, I mean, you're always growing and learning, and I've only been doing this for 2 years now. I mean, I have so much to learn, but that's something that I've been very conscious about trying to get better at. When I first started in the New 52, and really I guess where my stuff is even now is kind of a big product of my first editor on Nightwing, which was Bobby Chase, and she comes from an era, you know, in the 90s, which is where things were a bit quicker than, it was kind of before, you know, a lot of the superhero stuff really started decompressing in the way that we see in recent years. And I remember, you know, we had a lot of long conversations just about how to get things moving and how to, you know, just keeping in mind that every page is its own thing and making every page count. You know, and not just doing talking heads, and how do you get the characters moving, and can you do this shorter, and what's the point of it, and get in and out of it, and just keep the story moving. And coming from a film background and mindset, you write a screenplay and scenes kind of go on as long as you want them to go on, you know. So you don't really have that luxury in comics, and especially in the adventures of someone like Nightwing, who's all about energy and is supposed to be kinetic. The storytelling should match that.
Well, it was really cool because, you know, I was very happy. As a Batman fan, I'm always conflicted. I really like Dick Grayson as a character, but I'm a Batman fan. And so you have done a great job of, I think, expanding Nightwing into his own character, into his own being, you know, where so often when he was in Batman's costume, I just never could buy it, you know. But I like him as Nightwing so much better. And I just think that when you write him as Nightwing, this is Dick Grayson as he really ought to be. And I always enjoy seeing him. He's got the sensibilities that Batman's taught him, but he's not burdened by all the terrible things that Batman has suffered in his life. So he gets to be a hero instead of being a sort of a dark hero.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think you kind of nailed it right on the head there. And thank you. I mean, that means a lot. It's very nice to hear. He's always been the guy to me that I'd want to go have a beer with, you know. So I think that's the appeal of him for a lot of people. I think for a lot of fans, there's the legacy appeal, because he really is the first legacy character in comics. And to a lot of other people, the appeal is Batman without the baggage, you know?
That's a good way to put it, because as much as I enjoy Batman, and I've been a lifelong Batman fan, it's Dick Grayson that stands out to me. When people always say, well, who are you more like? I hope I'm more like Dick Grayson than I am like Bruce Wayne, you know, in that sense. And I think a lot of people come to Nightwing with that sensibility that this is a good character. He doesn't fight things, or he doesn't do things just for revenge. He's doing things because this is something that needs to be done.
Right, right.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Now, when the new 52 started up, did you ask for a Nightwing? Did they give you a Nightwing? How did that happen?
A little bit of both, I guess. I never outright asked for it, but the editors were very aware of my affinity for the character. I made it pretty clear that Dick Grayson was my, and continues to be, my favorite character in comics, and he's what got me into reading monthly comics when I was about 13 years old. And if you look at my film, it's the story of a former sidekick who comes back once he becomes an adult and is a little bit of a darker, more serious version of his former self. It's, you know, in some ways kind of a story of it's a Nightwing or a Winter Soldier kind of archetype. So I think it was pretty clear where my where my interests lie. And it just kind of worked out in such a way that they needed someone for the book. I was writing him in Gates of Gotham. They knew what Scott was planning for Court of Owls. The fact that I had started developing a relationship with Scott was probably a factor as well, just because it made creating synergy between the two books much easier. And yeah, I mean, it worked out pretty well for me.
Well, that's great because, Scott is, I always am intrigued. When the book first came out, it had your name first, and then when the trade came out, it had Scott's name first. And I thought,
oh, did it?
When the trade comes out, it says Scott Snyder and Kyle Higgins. And I went, I wonder how Kyle feels about that, because your name was there first. And, you have to give Scott credit, and I've interviewed him, is that he's done wonderful things with Batman. But I think you've done to Nightwing what he's done to Batman. And I think it's a great thing. The Batman family couldn't be in better hands, in my opinion. So you guys are doing wonderful stuff.
Wow, thanks.
As far as Nightwing goes, I mean, I didn't know that he was your favorite character in comics. That's interesting to me. So you've been reading Batman for quite a long time, then, I take it.
Yeah, I pretty much started reading the Bat books on a monthly basis from 1996 until, I'm still reading them. Mm-hmm. So I can't remember. I may have lapsed a little bit in college just from the month in, month out stuff, but I was always very aware of what was going on. And I followed writers. Mm-hmm. So, when Paul Dini was doing Detective, I was there every month. So those are really the only books that I stayed with over all these years. I read Spider-Man for a long time. Well, I read Ultimate Spider-Man from issue 1 through issue 65. And then I picked it up again, or I went back and read everything from 65 through 100. And I kind of fell off of that. But and regular Spider-Man, when Straczynski was writing Amazing, I read that for a really long stretch. I basically read from like Clone Saga through the end of Straczynski's run. But the Bat books are the ones that I don't think I ever wavered on them, actually, now that I'm jogging my memory here.
Wow. But that's a good preparation for you to do Nightwing, because you're familiar with his history.
Yes and no, actually.
Okay.
No. Because it's tough. I mean, as a fan, there are certain things that you love about the character that maybe would take him in a direction that may not work anymore. Or case in point with the New 52, where there's a very big concerted effort being made for newness and trying to really push things to the future and not fall back on the past or on continuity. That makes it tough. But at the same time, it can be liberating if you embrace it. So the stuff that I'm doing right now with Tony Zucco and the storyline we're developing in Chicago, I don't know that I would have come up with it if it hadn't been for the New 52. I mean, if someone just gave me the reins on Nightwing and said, go, and it's just a straight continuation of everything that had come before, I probably would have felt because I'm such a fan, I probably would have felt too beholden to Lonely Place of Dying. And then, I think Tony Zucco even popped up in Blackest Night at one point. So I don't know that I would have come up with or even let my mind go down the path of, well, what if Zucco was actually still alive, So, like I said, there are good things and bad things to it.
Well, Tony Zucco, of course, I remember a lot of from the animated series that Robin's Reckoning, the two-parter, had Tony Zucco involved.
That was my big first introduction to him. Yeah.
Yeah, I believe me, I can relate to that because that was a great one. Fox was forever trying to get them to bring Robin more and more into it, and that was how they did it, was to talk about his origin some. And when I see you writing Tony Zucco, my mind flashes back. I hear the voice of the actor who did Tony Zucco in the Batman the Animated Series.
Well, it's the guy, I'm blanking on his name, but he plays Biff.
Yeah,
in Back to the Future. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I try to, yeah. There are definitely nods to the animated series here and there in my stuff. And Zuko in particular, the name that he's going by, actually the issue, I don't know if we've revealed what his name is yet in issue 20. Do we know what his name is yet? What his alias is?
Tony Zulo, is that what it is?
No. Tony Zuko is going by a different name in Chicago.
Oh, I don't have the book in front of me, unfortunately.
I can't remember if we've revealed what it is yet. It may not be revealed until issue 21, but okay. if you look at that, I look at it as a little bit of a nod to the animated series.
Okay, because that book is out this week.
It is.
This podcast will air the weekend that after it comes out. So I haven't had a chance to see it yet, but I'm really looking forward to that issue. But, which leads me to a couple of quick things about the Nightwing series. I'm fascinated that he changed his uniform from blue to red. And did you have anything to do with that? Was that something to kind of make him stand out from the past?
That was actually completely out of my control. That was the decision that was made before I got involved on the book, and way above my pay grade.
Okay.
I think it's probably a product of trying to be different, trying to do something new with the character. But yeah, I honestly couldn't tell you. I mean, I don't know.
Okay. I'm fascinated, too, by that you are doing something that Scott is also doing, is that doing, like, extended storylines and also some shorter storylines. And I think that's a good thing as far as comics goes. I think trades are becoming something that we're getting a little weary of, you know, six-issue storylines all the time. So it's nice that you're varying it up some. And so I think that's a cool thing that you're doing. You're making the book more – you don't know exactly what you're going to get when you pick up the book, and I like that when I buy a comic. So I think you're doing a great job with that.
Oh, thanks.
You've also got Nightwing with a girlfriend, and I always find that interesting because, you know, whenever the Bat family's involved with women, it never goes well. And if I remember correctly, that this is Tony Zuko's daughter?
Yeah. You know, we've actually kind of been walking the line with that dynamic. They kissed for the first time during the Death of the Family story, but it hasn't delved totally into full-blown relationship. And with the reveal that Tony is still alive, that obviously has changed things between them. They haven't actually spoken since Dick left and went to Chicago.
That brings up another question, too, is that having him go to Chicago, which is in the DC universe, you don't often get to see, quote-unquote, real cities. And so to actually have him go to Chicago was an interesting twist for me because, you know, it's usually Star City or Gotham or Metropolis. You don't actually see them go to Chicago or New York or something like that.
Right.
What made you have him go to Chicago for a change?
I'm a big fan of real cities in comics. That's one of the things that I love about Marvel growing up reading them. That it felt like it could be happening in my world. A real city to me is much more relatable for a reader. It helps to ground the story so that no matter how fantastic the story is or out of this world it is, if you're setting in a place that a reader can relate to, it helps them buy in much more. Mm-hmm. So that was first and foremost something that I wanted to do. And my editor at the time felt very much the same way. So we talked about a couple different places. We talked about New York. But I thought, you know, New York had been used a lot, and it's so synonymous with the Marvel universe that I just, you know, I didn't want to kind of retread that ground. And in the previous continuity, before the New 52, Dick had lived in New York. So it's kind of like, let's do something different. I threw out Chicago, and I said, it's got a great history. It's got its own unique identity and visual identity. It's one of the biggest cities in the country, and I'm from there. So I know it really well. There's a lot I can bring to it. It hasn't been explored in the DC universe before. It hasn't really been explored in comics much at all. Mm-hmm. And they went for it. So
cool. Well, I have to say that New York must have been destroyed five times over and rebuilt five times based on all the superheroing that goes on in the Marvel comics. So I was very grateful you didn't pick New York to do that because I just thought, we've beaten New York to death several times. Let's go somewhere else. And when I saw Chicago, I've been to Chicago a time or two, and it's got a very unique feel to it. So it's nice to go somewhere that is different. And Nightwing kind of fits in there real well, I think, as a character. So I was very happy when they said he was going to Chicago. I said, okay, that's good. That's a different place. I like that.
Oh, thanks.
So as far as this current storyline you've got going on with the Prankster, I kind of find that interesting because the Prankster is not one of the A-tier type villains. He's more down like the C-tier. And it's kind of interesting to have him interacting with Nightwing. And the two of them are kind of, they find themselves in something of the same position in the recent books. And I thought that was kind of novel, you know, that they're being tracked by somebody instead of being against each other to start. So I was kind of interested, was that to kind of develop a friendship between the two?
Well, first of all, I think you're being far too kind by lumping him in to the C-list tier characters. When they asked me to take on the Prankster, I didn't even know who he was. So I had to go look him up. At first, I thought my editor was mistaken. He meant to say the Trickster, and he was getting the name wrong. I was not a fan of the character. I didn't know him. I kind of took it on to reinvent him and come up with something a little bit different and something for a modern audience. And then as far as the dynamic goes, yes, there's, I don't know, I don't want to talk about it too much because there's some stuff coming up in issue 21 that really spins things between them even further. But you're 100% right in that they're very much cut from the same cloth as far as the things that they're after. Mm-hmm. In this storyline, probably even more than you know at this point.
Okay, that's good. I'm looking forward to that. I love not knowing, and I never ask anybody to spoil stuff because I would much rather find out reading the book. But I love hints, on the other hand. So you've given some really good hints as far as going forward. Now, from what I see, this storyline is going to go on for the next several issues. It's going to go on until like 22 or 23 at least.
It wraps in 24.
24, okay. So we've got a longer storyline with that. But I also wanted to mention, too, I like Brett Booth's art on the book. I enjoyed the art previously, but this Brett Booth now has moved over from New Teen Titans over into you guys. And I think he's a good artist on Nightwing. I like the way that he draws Nightwing.
Yeah, Brett's great. Brett, unfortunately, was only able to do 3 issues on Nightwing. Oh. So he's actually already done his final issue, again, issue 21. Yeah, just other projects, other commitments came up, some other opportunities, and Brett had to bow out. But what a great way to kick off the new direction, because I'm right there with you. The sense of energy that Brett brings to Nightwing is really cool, and it's really inspiring for me. So it definitely affected the way that I was telling the story and the tone that I took with it. And it's been kind of a, you know, it's been a bit of a breath of fresh air. So
cool. Now, can you say who the new artist is going to be, or has that been decided yet?
I could, but I don't want to get shot. So No, okay. I don't know. Actually, I don't think they've announced it. So.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, don't get in trouble on my account. The last thing I want is for you to get in trouble. So we'll just have to keep buying the book and find out. That's what we'll have to do. So that's
good. You'll find out at least if they don't announce it before 22, you'll find out with issue 22.
Okay. Because I was looking at DCComics.com, and they still have Brett Booth drawing it up and even up to 23.
Right.
So I guess that was just that they did that before all this stuff happened. But anyway, we'll buy the book and we'll find out that way. So that's the best way to do it. Why don't we go ahead and move into your other new Batman project, which I think is really kind of cool. You're moving into something that's a little different for you. You're moving into the future, moving into Batman Beyond, I understand. Do you want to talk a little bit about how that came to be?
Sure. Like a lot of things, you get an email saying, hey, you like this character? And you say, are you kidding me? I love this character. And the conversation kind of, you know, goes from there. So Alex Antone, who is the editor on the Batman Beyond and Justice League Beyond series, he's out here in Los Angeles. He and I had gotten to know each other a little bit, and he was reading my Nightwing work. He was looking to kind of change things up on the Beyond line of books, and he apparently did not hate what I was doing on Nightwing too much. So that's kind of where it came from. I love the show, mm-hmm. And that's actually one area of the Bat world that, you know, we kind of talked about it briefly a few minutes ago with regards to Robin's Reckoning and the Tony Zuko stuff, but the DC animated universe, you know, Bruce Timm, Paul Dini, Alan Burnett, Eric Radomski universe is something that I'm a huge, huge fan of. It's like comfort food to me, you know. I grew up on it. I watched every episode every day after school. I remember watching the pilot to Batman Beyond with my dad on like a Sunday night. I kept up with the show. So the chance to continue the story of Terry McGinnis and company is is pretty cool and something that I totally could not pass up.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't blame you because I, like you, kind of came to it a little less enthusiastically. I thought, oh, this is going to be like a Spider-Man kind of a setup. You know, Terry McGinnis is Peter Parker, all these things. And I kind of looked at it and I was like, I came to it a lot less interested in it, but boy, it won me over in a hurry. That first, you know, the debut episode really got me. Boy, that was great. And from then on, I was just fascinated by all the stuff they did, including like the Return of the Joker direct-to-DVD film.
Yeah.
Wow, that just blew just fried my brain. I loved it so much, and I was sorry when it went away. So I was glad when the comics came along, and so that's kind of neat that you're getting to carry on the tradition that Adam Beecham has started. So I understand you have some new things planned for it?
For Batman Beyond?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're changing things up a little bit. I really enjoyed what Adam did for the last 3 years, and you know, I read it every month. So I didn't want to, how do I put it? I wanted to do something a little bit different, and I had the idea to advance the timeline by a year, which would bring Terry into college. By doing that, it kind of created our own kind of new universe for the book, but it also created a sense of intrigue and mystery about what happened in the missing time. Of course, I wasn't going to do that if I didn't have a story for what happened in the missing time. Yeah. And I do. And it's something that pretty excited about. I don't want to tease anything. Like,
okay.
It's pretty cool, and I was pretty excited when DC dug it. So you'll have to read the book to see what that is. Mm-hmm. We're not getting to it right away.
Okay.
But when the first issue launches, again, a year's gone by, character relationships are different, and I think they said in the solicits that the mayor of Neo Gotham dies. So the first arc is kind of a murder mystery.
Hmm.
So
very cool. Very cool. Well, you know, this isn't the only time we've seen Terry McGinnis older. We saw him in the Justice League. They had that one episode where they showed, like, they revealed a lot about Terry McGinnis that we didn't know prior to that, which actually made sense to me. I couldn't figure out how Terry McGinnis could be a Batman. But once we found that, you may know the episode I'm referring to, is what we get to see how he came to be. And you're going in a place where I think is a good place to go, is to move to slightly into the future and to give us a chance to see how these developments came to be.
Right.
So very cool stuff. Batman Beyond to me is just such it's what I call the Beyondiverse. All these fantastic things going on, and it gives you a chance to do a little more of a sci-fi spin on things as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's the idea.
Yeah. But as far as other stories go in the future, you must have other stories in mind for Terry.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm writing my second arc right now.
Hmm.
So I've written the first 8 issues. And we're moving into number 2, literally as we speak. I have the document open in front of me, and I'm actually just taking a few minute break from it in order to talk to you.
Okay, well, I'm really looking forward to what you've got to do with Terry McGinnis and the whole Bat family in the future as well. So I think that's going to be great fun. Are there other projects that you're working on that you'd like for people to know about besides Nightwing and Batman Beyond?
It's nothing at the moment that I can really talk about.
Okay.
I've got a couple things coming up on the creator-owned front that should be pretty cool, but nothing just yet that I can really say. Although I have talked about before that Rod Reese and I are doing a creator-owned book for the League, within the world of the League. So I don't have too many details on that just yet, but we should have more this summer.
Okay. Well, if you see the name Kyle Higgins on something, be sure to pick it up because you're going to get a really good story with it, and that's what I do. So, Kyle, I wish you much success going forward, and I hope you get to work with the Bat family for a long time to come because I enjoy your work on that.
Oh, thank you very much. And, it's been a pleasure.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored. I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
I'm glad to welcome back to the podcast Dave Romeo from Comics on the Green in Scranton, Pennsylvania. How are you doing today, Dave?
I'm doing fine, Wayne. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's good to talk with you. One of the great things I enjoy talking with you about, because you're a fan as well as the person behind the counter, so you know both the business and the fan side of comics.
Yeah, I certainly do. In fact, I'm like a lot of people nowadays, like a lot of our customers, who are reading more right now than they ever have in a long time. I mean, I know people want to say certain things about the industry as far as sales and this and that, but all I know is my customers and myself are reading a lot more than we were maybe even 5 or 6 years ago. So it's nice to see. Yeah, I always have a pile of books every week. I always look forward to it.
Well, that's great. The industry, I'm sure, is glad to hear that, because they're trying really hard to do the best they can. And my understanding was that the numbers were up from the first quarter from this year compared to last year.
Yeah, yeah, and I could see that. I mean, I believe our store is a little microcosm of what's going on in the industry there. And, I mean, our sales are definitely up over last year. I mean, some books, as some books slide, other books really rise up or new things come out. And, you know, we're definitely doing very well, and sales are definitely up.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things I wanted to talk with you about is DC's New 52 now. It's been a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
There's quite a lot of upheaval going on as far as creators and things like that going titles. I just heard that Legion was being canceled.
Yeah. Again. For the first time, I think, in 45 years, there won't be a Legion of Superheroes lead comic backup story or anything. But I have to say, sales on Legion have not been good for years and years. And I kind of feel like it has been limping along for a while. And even when Mark Waid was on the book and they revamped it, it just seemed like it's one of those books, they keep restarting it over and over and changing the history to the fact that older fans don't want anything to do with it and new fans don't know what to make of it. And the Legion, you know, they've been a tough sell for a long time, so that didn't surprise me too much. Although I have to say, I wasn't one that was reading it either.
Because I bought every New 52 book that was coming out, and I was reading Legion Lost as well as Legion, and I was kind of hoping, well, maybe this is going to take. I was a little nervous when they brought Paul Levitz back, because I thought, they're trying to draw in the older readers. The whole point of the New 52 was to attract new readers.
Right, exactly.
Then they bring him back, and I was like, well, okay, this isn't working as well as they wanted, obviously.
No, like you said, the whole thing was to do something new. And with the Legion, it just seemed like they really didn't do much new. I mean, like I said, I didn't read it, so I don't want to judge it too harshly. But at the same time, just from flipping through it and reading solicitations and hearing some feedback from the fans, yeah, it really wasn't anything new or special, and didn't have any kind of neat hook or something different about it that would make people want to read the Legion this time. So, but that happens with a lot of books, unfortunately. But the Legion being around so long is one that kind of rings out there for us older readers, not seeing it on the racks anymore. But, you know, yeah, sometimes you have to trim the fat to make way for something better. Maybe it's just what it needs to go away for a little bit.
Well, now that we've had a couple of years of the New 52, what's your overall impression of how it's gone, or do you think it's going to happen in the future as the DC moves forward?
Well, it's interesting. Right now, what the New 52 definitely did was bring in new readers. It definitely made the bigger books better sellers. For instance, your Batman titles across the board do very well. The Justice League, you know, titles for the most part do very, very well. And, of course, Green Lantern and its supporting cast members. But unfortunately, what we're not seeing is those more experimental books, you know, your Demon Knights. I'm not saying like something like Firestorm is experimental, but those second and third tier characters, even with some decent creative teams here and there and some good feedback, even some books that I like, they're getting canceled too. But it just seems like right now, I mean, DC can't complain, because they definitely are getting better sales out of the bigger books, but they have to find a way to make those second and third tier characters work with the fans. And I think they've tried to give me honest attempts, and I think the writers and artists really put their heart and soul into some of these books. But then you hear so much about the upheaval, about what editorial has done to shift people around. You wonder who's really, you know, plotting these books. Is it Jeff Johns and Dan DiDio saying, okay, we want Demon Knights to go in this direction, we want Deathstroke to go in this direction, and instead of really letting the writers do their thing? So, you know, I'm not sure exactly what's going on there.
Well, there's a lot of Jeff Johns in a lot of the books that are coming out. I noticed that they'll always end with a big surprise on the last panel.
Yes. Well, and that's a time-honored tradition for a cliffhanger-type story. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, it's just that I don't mind it every once in a while if they don't do that. But on the other hand, I guess they figure it's going to be lame if they don't do that now. What's going to make the person come back and buy the next issue if they don't have to?
Right, right. And Geoff Johns, of course, his name carries a lot of weight, so people will follow his books almost regardless. But I've kind of noticed a pattern, too, as a fan who's read almost everything he's written over the past couple of years, because everything is so large. His thing is he loves characters, and there's nothing wrong with this necessarily, but he loves his characters and the supporting cast to have secrets, secrets upon secrets upon secrets. So it seems like every time they introduce somebody new, there's a layer to peel back for that, and then a layer to, and then there's even something bigger past that, and then they're part of something else. And I felt like that, like with Green Lantern, and even now with Aquaman, although I enjoyed them, I kind of feel like, okay, maybe it is time to get some new blood on some of these books, because I'd like to see a different approach than what I've been seeing the past couple of years from Geoff Johns.
Well, what's your feeling on how the Green Lantern books are going to do now that Geoff Johns and his group have left?
Well, you know what? I worry that fans will just abandon them without trying the new ones. Something that I recently discovered, and I thought would happen. We've seen it happen with big names leave a book. But when Scott Snyder left Swamp Thing recently, I mean, literally without any kind of, you know, warning, notice, whatever, we just had like tons of people just stop buying it. They didn't even try the new creative team. And I got to say, two or three issues in, I think we're two issues in, I think it's a wonderful book. I'm really enjoying Swamp Thing. I think this is even better than some of Scott Snyder's run, which I thought became a little muddy there with the rot. But I'm afraid that some people might just abandon the Green Lantern books. You'll have your diehards stick around, but I don't know if we're going to see new people try it. That's what I really like to see. I'd like to see people say, now I want to jump on Green Lantern and see what they can do, rather than feeling like they've had to have read 8 years worth of Geoff Johns' run. But I'm afraid we're going to see a slide across the board. And I only hope that maybe some good word of mouth, if the books aren't good, will get people to stay on them or get new people on them.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, DC's going back to the tried and true. They're going to have, instead of being Superman, Batman, they're going to have Batman, Superman.
Right.
So they're going to bring all these things. They're going to rely a lot more on the heavy characters or the bigger characters. But, you know, one of the things the New 52 has done is created some new stars, like Jeff Lemire, for example.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
His Animal Man has just been amazing, and now he's on Green Arrow, and I think Green Arrow is really good.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
So I'm thinking that, you know, some of the people like that, if we give people a chance like Lemire got, mm-hmm. you know, Animal Man, when it first came out, everybody I know was going, Animal Man, Animal Man, Animal Man.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, so I didn't read that first. That was one of the ones I got to at the end, because mm-hmm. I was thinking, well, I'll get to it. Animal Man's good, but, you know, I don't know who Jeff Lemire is at that point. I didn't know really well, very well.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, I'll tell you, it just took off like a bullet. And he's,
right.
I mean, everything he does now, people that he's writing and drawing or writing or drawing, mm-hmm. That name is a big name. I'd like to see some of these other people get that shot that Jeff Lemire got.
Yes, I would too. And right now we're seeing some new names pop up there. As you mentioned, the Green Lantern titles. You know, Robert Venditti has been around for a while. It looks like they're losing Josh, I don't know how to say his last name, Josh Fialkov, who did a wonderful job on iVampire. And I thought, you know, he would get a crack at something there at DC. He may or may not. I know he's getting some work at Marvel now, but I think he's a good young talent they should foster. Charles Soule. From Swamp Thing, I think he's doing a good job. Justin Jordan, who was doing a really nice job. Team 7 of all books. I never thought I'd read Team 7, but Team 7 was a solid book, and Deathstroke was very good under him. Another character I never thought I'd care about, but he became pretty interesting in the New 52. So they do have, there's about a good five or six guys there, writers that if they could keep, but unfortunately, you know, sometimes, you know, if they're having problems over there, like we've been hearing, you know, Marvel might just come over and say, hey, you know, we've got X-Men limited series you could do, or a Spider-Man limited series. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's pretty attractive over, you know, having strict editorial control and some disarray over at DC. So we'll keep our fingers crossed.
Well, you brought up something that's been bothering me recently about, you know, a good solid book. You know, it used to be that a good solid book would be enough to get people to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems anymore that good solid books don't sell like they used to. We want something that's like groundbreaking or earth-shattering or stuff like that. And I always thought like Dan Jurgens on Firestorm, I thought mm-hmm. was very solid.
Right.
You know, I thought Legion was very solid, but mm-hmm. you know, it worries me that we've got to the place now where we have to be, you know, it has to be, you know, the old days they used to say senses shattering and pulse pounding
right.
and all that
mm-hmm.
stuff. And I'm just wondering if we've gotten to the place now where a good story isn't going to be enough anymore.
Yeah, I feel like people want to feel like what they're reading is part of a big event, not necessarily a big crossover like, you know, Blackest Night or Civil War, but they want to feel like what they're reading is very important to the entire universe that they're reading. So all of a sudden, Firestorm may be good, but its adventures don't seem to tie in much with DC, or Deathstroke seems like he maybe only ties in with other books that aren't selling, and even Swamp Thing for that matter, you know. They want to feel like it's part of something big. And sometimes just good solid storytelling gets put by the wayside. But again, people's dollars are stretched to the limit too. And we see that where people say, like, I'd like to try this, I'd like to try that, but, and it usually comes down to finances first. I think most people would try just about anything. But again, it goes back to, like you said, sometimes just good. I think a good example, actually, of a solid book that doesn't necessarily have to be earth-shattering, just good storytelling, is Mark Waid's Daredevil is very good. Daredevil's never a part of anything major cosmic going on in the Marvel Universe, but people really enjoy that book. I like Mark Waid's run on Hulk right now, too. I think he's doing a fantastic job on Hulk. And the Hulk, even though he's part of the Avengers, his book doesn't necessarily alter the course of events in Marvel history right now. But right. So I think there's room, but some of these characters, I think they just have to find a new audience. And, sometimes the second and third tier characters maybe are only going to work as supporting cast members anymore. Mm-hmm. We might have to resign ourselves to that fact, too.
This is a good segue to get into Marvel, because when the New 52 came out, you know, what had happened with the sales was that DC and Marvel were sort of competitive.
Mm-hmm.
And now what's happened with Marvel now and the Age of Ultron and things like mm-hmm. that is Marvel has reasserted itself
yeah.
up above DC as far as sales mm-hmm. numbers go. Is yeah. that true in your store as well?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. With the exception of your, like I said, the Batman, Justice League, Green Lantern titles, DC doesn't really have any second, third tier characters that really sell that great for us that I would kind of miss them if they left. Where Marvel has more of a, even though they have our top sellers, there's a gradual sort of decline from the number one selling Marvel book in our store to maybe like a number 20th selling book or something like that. There's a gradual sort of decline, and it's a little bit more even, where with DC, you know, Batman is our best seller of everything we sell. But at the same time, after Batman, there's like a huge drop to like the next Batman title, and a huge drop to Justice League, and a huge drop. And then after that, once you get past like the top five DC books or so, there's a huge drop where I'm talking the difference between, you know, selling 80 copies of a title a month down to selling like 30 copies of the next best selling title from DC. So.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, like Marvel has Hawkeye, for example, that's getting a lot of attention right
mm-hmm.
now.
Right, yeah.
And Hawkeye is not one of the main characters in my estimation. Now, he's one of the lower tier. But
no, but they did something really interesting. Matt Fraction's taken him in a different direction. Actually, somebody brought up something neat, actually, when you mentioned Hawkeye and you mentioned Green Arrow. We actually have two very good Archer-type books from Marvel and DC. I don't know if that's ever happened ever in the history of comics. That's nice to see.
Well, what's also fun, too, is that the Arrow show on the CW was doing very well.
Yeah.
And there's a digital version of that book coming out. I get a kick when they throw little Easter eggs in there for us. Like, for mm-hmm. example, there was a Judge Grell.
Oh, that's and cool. Remember Mike Grell on Green Arrow. Yep.
See, other people don't care, but I was sitting there going, oh, Judge Grell. Oh,
that's
yeah.
That's nice. Yeah, that's cool.
So those kinds of things are fun. Of course, now Marvel's got Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. coming on ABC this fall.
Mm-hmm. All right. There's a really good buzz about that, especially coming off all the Avengers things. And mm-hmm. If that show's even half decent, I think it'll be a huge hit.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be interesting because now not only are we having the battle in the comic stores, we're going to have a battle on the small screen.
Yeah, and maybe we'll even get a battle on the big screen, maybe, if Superman does well. I'm very curious how that's going to do. I have high hopes for that. It looks pretty good, so maybe we'll actually get a good DC movie as well.
I get a huge kick because I have some friends who think that the Man of Steel, Superman, should wear the same costume he wore for decades.
Mm-hmm.
He shouldn't have this armor stuff on. And I say to them, well, did you watch the Batman movies?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. I said, he wasn't wearing blue and gray, and he had a mm-hmm. black uniform. Well,
right.
That's different. You know, he's not. Mm-hmm. No. Getting back to Marvel, the thing that interests me so much about it is that, like, Age of Ultron, when Marvel miniseries and events like these start off, they always start off with a lot of expectation and big numbers. Mm-hmm. And then as it goes along, it sort of fizzles down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And we get to the end, people kind of go, oh, is that over? Oh, okay. But, you know, there are a lot of people who really love every event. And, boy, I respect them. I bought the first Age of Ultron, but I have to say I've read that story many times about, uh-huh. you know, the universe coming and taking over. I mean, we had speaking of Geoff Johns, he did in Justice Society, mm-hmm. in the JSA, he did a thing where the Ultra-Humanite took over the Thunderbolt, and he took over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
it's the same story, basically, to me. So after the first issue, I was kind of like, well, I read this story.
Yeah.
Of course, they're supposed to be making, and this is supposed to be their flashpoint, where they're mm-hmm. making changes to some of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how is Age of Ultron doing in your store?
It's doing very well. It sells very well, and it's actually starting to pick up a little more steam now because I think people had some, they were a little bit hesitant at first, and now that we're, you know, 6-7 issues in or whatever we're at right now, I can't remember where we're at, But, people are, more people are going back now, picking up all of the issues because they heard about big things. They heard things are coming up, you know, with Neil Gaiman's Angela character coming in and something huge going to happen in issue 10 that they can't even tell you. And so it's doing very well. People are excited. People do like it. I think that the fact that it comes out quickly helps it, and that they had a lot of issues finished before they released it, because I think if this dragged out for 10 months, this would be, I think, a less enjoyable story. Like you said, it's a good story, but it's a story we've read before. Now we have another alternate future timeline, Days of Future Past type thing going on in it. Mm-hmm. And I think the fact that it's coming out more quickly has helped the sales, too, and keep people interested in it, keep it at a fast pace.
You know, one thing that's going off, getting a lot of attention right now, is Superior Spider-Man.
Yes.
They're doing kind of a Peter David Hulk thing, you know, when Peter David used to get the sales numbers and the numbers started to fall, he would do a change to it.
Right.
And so what's happening now with Superior Spider-Man, first he's got the ghost of Peter Parker there, and he's got, he's got the sensibilities of Peter Parker. Well, now, of course, that's all been supposedly scrapped, and he's going to have a uniform that has sort of octopus-like arms, but they're spider leg kind of things on it.
Right.
And so he's going to be the pure Dr. Octopus.
Mm-hmm. Well, Doctor's going to improve on Spider-Man. That's why he got he's the Superior Spider-Man. Spider-Man wouldn't dream or even have the means to do all these things, and he's going to do it. Plus, like you said, he leans toward those robotics and everything. That's what he knows best.
I mean, are people really buying that book a lot?
Oh, yeah. That's one of our best-selling Marvel books. In fact, right now, Wayne, come to think of it, that is our, aside from Age of Ultron, that is our best-selling of like a regular monthly title of the titles. By far, it outsells Avengers and X-Men titles right now. And people are really excited about it. I mean, there's a reason when Marvel's going into, you know, 4 and 5 printings of these early issues, that truly is supply and demand, because we're always selling out of those issues. We're constantly reordering the new ones, and people really like the difference. And in fact, even me as a Spider-Man fan, who's been, I've been enthused with some of the stuff that Dan Slott has done, and other times I just kind of feel like there's too much going on. There's almost too big of a supporting cast, kind of taking away from Peter. The Superior Spider-Man, I think, is just a terrific twist on things that we've never seen really before, and fans really like it too. And I like it. I have to say, long time Spider-Man fan, I really like this, and I have no idea how it's going to turn out.
Well, I hate to tell you, but I have a fair idea how this is going to turn out, because you know what's going to happen, and it's just inevitable. And I say this to people, and they'll go, yeah, well, we know that. But is that before Amazing Spider-Man number 2 comes out, Peter Parker is going to be back in his body, because Marvel's going to want to have comics that resemble what's going on in the movie theater. So I have a feeling that's what's going to happen.
Of course, yeah. And my whole thing is, we've seen it all, so I just want to see how he's going to do this, and then what's going to happen to Doc Ock as a result, or, the consequences of everything that Ock is doing as Spider-Man, what's going to happen with that. And what I'm really anxious to see is, I as a fanboy, I have to say, I'm really excited to see Norman Osborn as the Green Goblin fighting Doc Ock as Spider-Man. I have no idea how crazy that will be, but I'm looking forward to that, because I think that's inevitable.
I shouldn't grouse on that so much, but I did grouse. I did the same complaint when Dick Grayson was Batman for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I complained bitterly about that, because I said, he's not going to stay Batman forever. It's only temporary.
Right.
And sure enough, he changed, and Batman, they had a long thing where Morrison took him through all the eras and all these different Batman.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And also, as far as that goes, I think that Marvel knows how to market their stuff. I think they do a vastly better job of it than DC does.
And you know what? We still see, Wayne, and this is something that's been kind of common in all the years I've been in comic retailing. Marvel still attracts, with few exceptions like your Batman, Marvel still attracts the younger crowd, and the younger crowd is willing to try comics for the first time. Now, the movies have helped. I'm not going to lie about that. But at the same time, when kids come in, they like Spider-Man, they like Deadpool, they like Iron Man, they like the Avengers, and they like Thor. And so they'll ask more about Marvel characters than they will about DC characters, unless it's Batman. But almost nobody comes in asking about Superman and, insert character here. I mean, even Green Lantern to a degree, you don't really have young people asking about that. So I think Marvel perpetuates that thing that we're younger, hipper, and cooler, and we always have been. And they still get away with it. Even if they're not, they still get away with it.
Because, Dr. Octopus, let's face it, this is an old guy. I mean,
exactly.
He's stuck now in a young guy's body, which is, I have to tell you, kind of creeps me out when I think about it. He's putting the make on Mary Jane, and I'm kind of like, get away from me with that. But, kids, I guess, they don't see the difference. They just kind of look at it and say, well, he's doing what a young guy does.
Right.
So anyway, let's move on to the other companies, because my understanding is that Image has seen an uptick as far as sales. And of course, they've had a big push recently. But they're coming out with a lot of books, and they're attracting a lot of people like Mark Miller, you know, who this and all these things are going on. Grant Morrison's doing stuff for them. They've got a lot of the big names are going over to Image. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering if Image is good. How are your sales doing? Are they going to come up and be like are they going to give DC and Marvel any kind of contest anytime soon?
You know, I don't think they will. I mean, we definitely have seen an increase in sales over that. And it definitely has a lot to do. It's like what I call the Walking Dead effect. Is the success of Walking Dead over there and a few other titles has attracted some young talent. They've attracted some of these, you know, longtime creators, your Grant Morrisons, your Greg Ruckas, and people like that who become a little bit disenfranchised with their previous companies, or maybe in the case of Marvel, they really don't have a good creator-owned, you know, line. They sort of do, but they don't put their heart into it. And DC, from what I understand, hasn't really restructured the contracts for like Vertigo and things like that to make it more appealing to some of these writers now. That's why, I mean, Brian K. Vaughan, his last two big, huge successes came from DC through Wildstorm and Vertigo, and he took Saga over to Image. Took Fiona Staples with him, who worked at Wildstorm, I think, on her last project or so. And, of course, Saga is a humongous hit and well-deserved. It's a terrific book. But I don't know, because of the books that they have, I can see them always eating into the market share. But DC, just on volume alone, and Marvel will always be your one and two. I'd be very surprised to see Image take like 37% of the market share, or even have even close to 20%. But as more and more, you know, big time creators go there, you will see more people gravitating toward it. And it's the alternative to superheroes too. Image Comics, I say right now, has become what it kind of set out to do 20 years ago, but it took it a long time to get there. They said it was going to be a haven for creator-owned projects and to do something different, when all we got originally was just, you know, Marvel-type and DC-type products kind of warmed up that looked a little bit differently under Image, but they weren't any different from the superhero books we were reading. But now we have a great diversity over at Image, and I think Robert Kirkman's responsible for some of that, for attracting some of this talent. People see the success that other black and white and small press stuff is doing over there. And so I think there's less of a chance, a little bit less of a risk to take now. And they're not going to alienate themselves from Marvel and DC. These writers have nothing to lose by taking something over to Image. And it's nice to see. And we're definitely seeing sales up on those books.
Well, you were the one that introduced me to Walking Dead back in the day.
Way back in the day, right.
And I get a kick because, you know, almost every month the number one trade is always the first Walking Dead trade paperback. And people are endlessly having to. People tell me, you know, they can always tell when a new episode of Walking Dead comes, because the next week all these people come in trying to get the first trade paperback.
Yep.
And so, you know, it's almost always number one, and I just get a huge kick because, you know, as long as Walking Dead is going on, I mean, Image doesn't have to worry. They've got lots of money coming in because of all that. So.
And I said Walking Dead has become the next Star Wars as far as merchandise. As I look through my catalogs every month, there's Walking Dead attached to everything from board games to, you know, bottle openers to whatever. So, I mean, hey, good for Robert Kirkman, man. He came up through the ranks. And he's a savvy businessman now, and I hope he makes so much money he can buy himself an island. As long as he keeps writing comic books, I'm happy.
Yeah, well, he does tell good stories. I'll give him that.
Mm-hmm.
I do like that a lot. So the other companies, of course, we've got IDW, you've got Dynamite, you've got all these other people.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one trend I'm noticing that's happening a lot in those companies is the resurrection of pulp heroes.
Yeah, especially at Dynamite. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because recently the one I really love is Black Bat, which is just terrific. I love that book. There's other books coming along. I think Black Beetle was another one. All these black characters.
The Owl is another one. I'm not sure if he's actually a cult character or not, but he's definitely in that vein.
He was in the 60s. I remember when I was a young kid, I was buying The Owl and Owl Girl, and I just love that stuff.
Oh, so it's That Owl. Okay, because I do remember those comics. I don't know if it was That Owl or if it goes back farther, but Dynamite in particular has really found a niche with the adventure-type heroes, with Tarzan and Lord of the Jungle. Of course, Miss Fury and the Shadow and Green Hornet and all that. And there's definitely an audience for that. I mean, none of those ever sell big numbers for us, but they're very consistent. They pick up new readers here and there. And the quality seems to be there because the fans keep coming back every month. And it's nice to see it. There's definitely room for those.
I bet they attract an older buying clientele, though.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. And when I think to the people that are buying those books for the most part, I mean, we do have some younger guys too who will try The Shadow and Green Hornet because they recognize those characters. But some of the other characters, especially Lone Ranger and things like that. But you know what? Those are fans that, you know, were looking for something in comics and maybe haven't found it in a long time. And now they found the characters they love. And that's a great thing. It's good for diversity.
So looking forward, okay, this year was better than last year. Do you think that trend is going to continue based on how things are going and how the industry is moving?
I certainly hope so. I really believe that they're like some of the best writers and creators and artists in the business right now working all at the same time. And like we said, most fans are telling me they're reading more now than ever. I know our sales are up. And going back to Image a little bit, because they're the ones that bring in a little bit of a more diverse audience for us now, and Walking Dead and things like that. Although, you know, my meat and potatoes are still my Batman and X-Men and Spider-Man and things like that. And a lot of those fans, they're getting into comics. Maybe they're getting into comics a little bit later. They didn't start reading as kids. They started reading as teenagers or in their college years. So they're having fun reading Walking Dead and Spider-Man. But you know what? They like comics, and people are always asking. It's every day, multiple times a day. What's good? Here's what I like. What do you think I would like? What's good? So people want to read. And as long as the retailers are out there and there's great websites with good recommendations, you know, there's definitely something to point people to. And I think that will cause more growth. Going back to your question, is getting those fans who maybe got away from comics or hadn't read comics before, and they can get excited about Walking Dead as much as they would about Age of Ultron.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. Now, if somebody wants to contact you or to stop by the store, how do they get in touch with you?
Oh, we're all over the place. of course, we have our Facebook page, which is very busy little site, and I keep that nice and fun and informative. On Facebook, just as Comics on the Green. You can find us at www.comicsonthegreen.com, and we have everything on there from directions to our store, to our email, however you want to contact us through there. We're also on Twitter as Cot Green. I'm not on Twitter as much as I am on Facebook, but we check all our accounts, and our email, if you would just like our email, it's cotgreen, that's C-O-T green, @AOL.com. We were online back in like 94, so I still have my AOL account attached to the store.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Now, of course, if somebody wanted to use that antiquated thing called a telephone, what number would they call?
Oh, they could use a telephone anytime, sure. We're open 7 days a week. Our area code is 570-342-5960.
Okay, Dave. Well, good talking with you as always, and we'll see how things pan out in the industry as we go forward.
Thanks, Wayne. Looking forward to it. You're doing a great job. I appreciate you having me on. Thank you.
To admit that I'm kind of jazzed and kind of worn out at the same time, and that's because I just got back from watching The Man of Steel for the first time. Yeah, I expect this movie to be a multiple viewer for me because I really, really enjoyed it tremendously. There's a lot to talk about it, and I'll just hit the high points during this review. It's fast-paced. It's very much like the New 52. If you like Superman with the tight pants on and the silky drawers, you're not going to like this very much. He's also doing some things that aren't necessarily very superheroic at times, but it's very good. It's very much like the Batman films are, updating the character into the current era. Now, Henry Cavill does a wonderful job as Superman, and I think the other actors are good choices too, pretty much, except for Steve Lombard, who should be more of a husky football player guy as he was back in the comics. But other than that, everybody else seems to be pretty good choices, and the effects are fantastic. Music is great. Of course, Hans Zimmer did the Dark Knight trilogy, and it's just a fantastic, fast-paced movie that I think most Superman fans will like. In fact, I think a lot of comic book people and most non-comic book fans are liking. I've already seen some people on Facebook to say that it's the very best superhero movie they've ever seen, and that's even from people who've seen Iron Man 3. So should you see Man of Steel? You bet. It's going to be, for me, the best movie of the summer. I can already tell it. And that's a wrap for this episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Be back next week when I'll have more news, reviews, previews, and interviews, as always. But until then, keep reading your comics.
And so I leave, knowing that a world full of heroes has nothing to fear.